Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me for the second time in a row is Jansen Misrick and Peter Donahue.
Andy, thanks for having us back. It's so lovely to be here with you again.
Yeah, it's just great that we're finding time to do these a little more often.
Yeah.
Fall, things slow down for us. And how have you guys been since, you know, last time we've been here?
Oh, everything's been great. Weather's still fantastic here. It's nice to get the staff together in the cube and have some more staff meetings and get our thoughts organized about what we want to do moving forward in the off season and kind of cool down a little bit from the busy summer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great.
Well, we were just talking about a few of our experiences playing golf this summer, and Pete, you kind of titled it, it's always good to hear about great golf experiences. So, we think so highly of ourselves that we think other people might care to hear our stories rather than just the three of us.
I think if you love golf, you love to hear golf stories. I mean, guys, it was a joke growing up, that your wife didn't want to hear about your golf stories, and who did want to hear about them? Because, I mean, you put down these memories and you want to consume the memories, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to tell people, man, I hit this shot and it felt like, man, I just, whatever it was, it has meaning to you if you're a golfer. And that meaning, has an impact on your self-esteem, your enthusiasm. And so I love hearing guys talk about their golf.
Unless they start with telling me what score they shot, then I don't care.
Yeah, I think there's a right way to tell. I enjoy a good storyteller, or somebody that can kind of set the scene of what was going on. I think the worst is listening to people talk about the round where, oh, I left so many out there, blah, blah, blah. I three jacked, and I got so many bad breaks, and blah. It's like, well, that's not cool. That's not a highlight reel, dude. SportsCenter, not top 10. Get out of here. But tell me about, one or two good shots, and like, how was your day after that? What'd you have for dinner? Like, I'd rather know that than all these crappy things.
All this misery.
Yeah.
Or at least if you want to tell me about the misery, tell me about the correctable errors. I mean, that you can identify that leads us forward. If it's just you're just piling up your miseries on yourself, it's kind of the opposite of what these coaches talk about now. I remember, I think reading in the newspaper about coach saying about Nagy talking about the kicker, Pinero, and stacking good practices. Well, I mean, you have to measure it good, right, to stack it.
Sure.
If you hit two out of three and you're bitching and obsessing over the one that you missed, I don't think you're stacking a good experience unless that it's really stimulating to you, that you actually react in a positive energy way to your negative experiences, then I'd say, okay, you're okay. Because what you're doing is helping you move forward.
Great. Well, all right, Jansen, you're up first.
Okay.
You've had quite the summer.
Yeah, I've played a ton of golf this summer, I tell you what. I got pretty golfed out, if I'm being quite honest, in the middle of the summer. We talked about on the podcast before, qualified for the Illinois Open. That was a phenomenal experience going through that qualifier, especially the way I had to get in. Like, had a pretty tough front nine, but played fantastic golf on the back. Got into the playoff. was so nervous. I thought I was just going to like explode, but I just played those two playoff holes like so good and made this just amazing putt to seal the deal. So that was just like awesome. And then to play in the actual Illinois Open was just thrilling. And to be able to share that experience with my twin brother, Jake, and my dad caddying for me both days. I mean, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not too pleased with how I scored in the Illinois Open, but extremely proud of the way I played, my preparation, how I was able to handle myself emotionally out there, my warm-ups both days, just, you know, all the things other than actually putting a couple good scores together, you know. And I have to look at it from a bigger picture and say, okay, well, one, I've never played on that stage before. It was totally new. Those courses were very long, and I've never played on courses with, like, hole locations like that, like legit tournament setup. So that was all very new to me. But I had a great front nine on the first round with an opening birdie. So I was like, feeling pretty good. Right. Illinois Open first one, birdie first right. hole. Second hole, it was a par three, and I left it just short, and I chipped up and like left it hanging on the edge for two in a row. I was like, all right. And then I lost a ball on the next tee shot. So then I was like, oh, wake up, here we go.
Oh,
but, but just like some awesome up and down. So it was like great opening nine. And then the back nine at Ridgemore Country Club, I finished with just like this, just a great 39. It was just like the best 39 I could have ever shot. And I made this amazing up and down on the last hole to do it, and just nailed this 8-footer up the hill to finish. And that was a cool way to finish. So very, very pleased. A lot of good golf. And excited to do that next year now that I know what that's like.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then, like I said, you know, with the preparation with all of that and going through all those practice rounds and practices and then still trying to finish up the boot camp program and playing with those kids, like I played so much and my body was just screaming at me to just stop swinging the club. So I did for a couple of days and I felt better. And then I was inspired by Andy to take half my clubs out of the bag and just play a couple rounds with seven clubs. And then I threw the driver back in. And so I think I've played probably 6-7 rounds with just 8-9 clubs in the bag, 9 clubs.
Wow.
And I've shot 76 or better in every round. Oh, it's just like, so that's cool.
That's really cool.
Really cool.
It's more fun.
It is. It just helps you create shots. And it just, for me, it allowed me to enjoy the game again without taking it too seriously. You know, it's like, oh, I don't have my pitching wedge to hit this perfect number. It's like, no, you don't. So what are you going to do?
Right.
And so that's just good to kind of help wake the brain up again, which was cool. So, yeah, I've just been enjoying enjoying shot shaping, still kind of tuning up the swing a little bit, but really just excited for the off season to kind of work on some projects that I've identified that I want to work on. So
didn't know you played six rounds with half set.
Yeah it was pretty good. You're
infecting the whole the whole company.
Well, you know, I mean, you would understand it better than anybody else right now, because, you know, you just got back from Scotland, and so, you know, you're over there walking your clubs around the golf course, and you know that, you know, carrying a bag that's, you know, doesn't burden you down is an important part of the experience. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah, it's true. I only brought 9 clubs to Scotland. Jansen asked me before going, he's like, are you gonna stick with 9? I'm like, these are my clubs now. Like,
yeah,
the last time I played with full set was, I think it was on my birthday at Mount Prospect when you shot 29.
Oh, and yeah, that would be about the time
I had there were two holes, like that par hole seven, you know, par three.
Sure.
I missed the green long, and then there was another hole on the back nine where I missed the green long. And I was like, well, I could miss the green long with a half set of clubs. Like, what am I doing with all of these things? And no turning back since then. So
no, I don't think, you know, I don't think you would. I had people tell me, you know, my good friends and people I respect say, you know, gee, you're really going to miss that 8-iron or that, you know, but it was 30-some years ago that I, you know, took all the the even numbered irons out of the bag, because after going to Scotland and Ireland, you know, it was just, I realized that the secret to my enjoyment of the game didn't have to do with making perfect swings. It had to do with flighting the ball and shaping shots. And so, you know, you didn't need a lot of clubs for that, you know. And so I never have missed the 8-iron or the 6-iron. Now, does it mean that I couldn't have hit the ball closer in competitive tournaments and stuff like that with if I had it? Yeah, I suppose. But the enjoyment you get out of making the shot, out of gearing it down, opening the face, closing the face, whatever it is that you're doing, I mean, the reward of that creative experience is extraordinary.
Yeah. And I don't I go back and forth each day on, like, could I actually do better with a full set of clubs? You know, like, each time, like, I played yesterday and I missed a green because I had to hit an 8-iron and would have hit a 9-iron if I had it. And it's like, oh, if only I had 9. But I heard Jordan Spieth told a story about how Jansen, your guy, Jordan Spieth.
That's my boy.
He loves, he thinks he does so well at Augusta because, I've never been there, but it's just his story of, like, there's no even lies. Everything's on a hill, everything's on the side, and the pins are always, and the greens are crazy. So it's everything is like, you're just doing something new every single time. And he talked about how that almost, like, wakes up his mind to, and he does better because of that. And so I feel like that's the same thing for me of, like, when I'm forced to, like, think more and be more intentional about the shots I'm hitting, I do better. And so, but the courses here aren't set up in the way, like, Augusta is. It's just flat for the most part, and you're hitting the same thing every time. It's like, well, driver as far as you can, and then it's like, use the rangefinder, okay, 7-iron, grab it and go. And it just turns into, it's like robot golf, and I don't do very well at that. I seem to do better when I can focus. It helps me focus more. I don't know, maybe that's something I need to work on myself, or maybe it's just that some people could actually do better with fewer.
Well, I definitely think you know, it's awakened you, you know, taking these clubs out, which I think that's why I like swishing putters. You know, I've got a family of putters, and for whatever reason I've stuck with this kind of rectangular Nike putter for the longest time, where I've always like preferred round putters and, you know, and things like that. But I think change is, you know, keeps things fresh. I got I ordered a hickory shafted iron from Louisville Golf because I've always been curious about it. And now especially, you know, after Medina, where you see that the three elements, the great athleticism of the athletes, the ball that flies straighter and farther than balls, you know, 40 years ago, the clubs, you know, which have various forms of trampoline, you know, effect on them. You know, it's kind of led me in the other direction. You know, these guys just ate up a golf course at Medina that was 7,600 yards long. Could have been 8,600 yards long, and I don't think it would have made any difference.
Chip and putt.
But it's so I got this club, and I was curious about irons. I've hit hickory woods, and been surprised at how far the ball goes, you know, that it goes as far as a carbon steel shaft. It was just the torque, the twisting of the head that made it different. But I always thought that the irons, whenever I picked them up, were like, you can't play golf with these things. They're either, you know, not substantial enough where the head weight doesn't feel like, you know, it feels like it'd be overmatched by running into the ball. So anyway, I got one of these things. It says 3 on it, but it's mainly a 6-iron. But I took it out to Canal the other day, and I started pitching around with it. And just the fact that it led me into pitching the ball and having it hit the ground and run up onto the greens and bounce up, I mean, that's a way more interesting experience, watching a ball do that, than watching a ball like lawn darts just sail up in the air and hit the green. I mean, you know, it's there's so much happening.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to account for the first bounce. You know, you've got to account for the slope of the land. I mean, it's so much more creative. And when you pull it off, it's like, wow. And so, you know, I started just knocking it around, taking balls and going to different places and just pitching them. And the other day I went out and I played with Marilyn and I went up to Pine Meadow, which, by the way, is in fabulous condition. They've got a green superintendent up there that's out of this world. They finally figured it out. This guy's built some smooth, nice. You know, he's gotten that turf really good. That was really the only complaint about the place that anybody ever had. And now if they haven't been up there, I'd suggest it. Anyway, we went up there, and right from the very beginning, so you get out on the first hole, 378 yards, hit a drive down there, have, you know, whatever, into the green, 130-some yards, and I thought, well, you know, I could hit a 7-iron, but at this point in the round, I haven't hit any balls. Why don't I just pitch a 5-iron? So I just used the stroke that I've been working on with my wooden shafted club and hit this easy as hell shot up on the green 12 feet away. And I thought, that's pretty skillful. Yeah. I mean, I'm proud to be able to do that. I'm so glad that this funny club awakened me to the possibility of golf playing like this. That you could play, and that was the lesson, you know, that I got years ago from watching Sam Snead at an outing. And that was the lesson was, why don't you try hitting the easiest shot available to you instead of the hardest?
Yeah, but someone who, if you're used to playing a full set of clubs and you're never forced to do that, like the easiest shot would be, I don't know, that 7-iron, because that's the number you have. You know, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, but then once you practice and get used to this, then it becomes a little bit different.
Well, yes, no, you must practice it. I mean, if you don't practice pitching the ball, you know, with clubs, then you're not going to be good at it. And but when you do, you know, you're doing it at a level of output that's, you know, that's very easy to control. On the other hand, you know, if you're making swings where you're really at the top end of your physical output or capabilities, well, you're probably going to lose your balance a fair number of times and you know, not hit the shot the way you wanted to, especially at the beginning of a round.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fun. I did just get back from Scotland, and the first round we played was at this course called Dunbar, which is near North Berwick, and it's like right on the ocean. All the holes are right there, and I think I hit an 8-iron into 10 different greens that day, between 100 yards and 200 yards, all the same club based on where the wind was. And I had like 4 birdies like of an 8-iron that was to like 3 feet. I don't even know how that happened. But it's just like interesting things like that that are almost silly to some extent, but you would never have it, you know, if you had all the clubs. I don't know. I just think it's more interesting to have that story and have the different, you know, than doing it the same way everyone else does it.
Well, I think so. And I really do think that when you're playing like that, you're really much more in tune with the course, the ground, the wind, everything else, because, you know, you're making...
It matters more.
Yeah, yeah. It matters more, right. You can be blind sometimes, you know, to simply a rangefinder, yardages and factors for wind and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I think that it's hard to argue when you see tour players, you know, stamping out, you know, one great shot after another, you know, on the courses that they're playing, and say that's not the best way to play golf. But it just depends to me on you know, what you're looking for. You know, I think, you know, I was waiting for a student last night down at Canal, and I went out with that hickory club, and I, you know, started hitting a variety of shots, including hitting lob shots from, you know, 12 yards out of the rough on the right side of that first green. And I thought, and you know, so many of the balls went in the hole. I mean, it was just, and it's just like you're saying, it's like silly. Like, where is this coming from? I mean,
right.
I've somehow tapped into some dimension that, you know, is just extraordinary. And I don't know how I got here, but actually, you know, you do. You become so interested and so just in the shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your ego anymore. It's just the shot and what you, you know, what you enjoy about it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing Half Set after going to Scotland the first time, and we loved it. My wife and I loved it so much that we went back kind of the next year. And we don't go to all the fancy places, like never paid more than $100 for a round. But there's still, you know, the course would be like $500 here because it's right on the ocean, you know, great condition, whatever. But, and you guys have both been there, right? These ones that are on they're called Lynx courses because they're in this land called like the Lynx land, which is between the ocean and the town. And it's just like there's lots of mounds and rolling, and it's like
dunes.
And it's, you know, lots of very sandy ground, but, you know, hard, firm and fast conditions. And when we went, you know, so it's been 2 weeks ago, the thought that kept coming back to me of these courses is like there's something so special about it because it seems like golf is the only thing like you should be doing in this space, right? Because it's like they can't farm there, they can't build a house there, they don't really need to build a park there because, you know, people can walk on the beach anyway. It's like this strange piece of land was like built specifically for golf, but not built, you know. It's just like it was there and it was discovered. And so it's like playing golf in these places, like you're doing almost like what's supposed to be done in this place. I don't know, you know. I would imagine like a farmer would feel that about like growing corn, and it's like, yeah, this is what we're doing, I'm feeding the world. And but, you know, golf is not, you know, feeding people, but it's still that same sense of like this is what should be happening here. There felt like something right about it more than, you know, some of these we talk about the courses that we don't really like so much that are just like maybe cut through a forest and it's very artificial and man-made. And it's like, well, yeah, we're playing golf here, but it's there's something almost fake or fabricated about it.
Yeah, there's this one course back home that I played as a junior golfer, and it bobs and weaves through this residential neighborhood. And every single hole out there except for one, excuse me, two, there's two holes on the back nine that don't have any houses on them, but every single hole other than that is tree lined, quote unquote, with houses in backyards. And all these backyards have nets blocking, like extending from their fences to protect their windows.
Sounds disgusting.
And so it is just the most horrific thing to look at, all these ratty, faded out nets that are blown around in the breeze and tree lined, framed, you know, and that's what's framing this flat hole. It's just like, oh, this is horrible, you know. There should be more houses here, instead of a golf hole. And and so, you know, moving up here and then like, and you know, I think we'll get to it, I finally went up to Lasonia and played, and being in these like farmlands that have these gentle rolling hills and have been to Scotland you know in the past, it's just, yeah, there's something that feels right about being in an open area and some unique land, because that, I think that's how it should be. Not cookie cutter, you know, in a neighborhood.
Yeah, I think it certainly adds, you know, a lot to the experience. You know, if you love, you know, if you love seeing the ball fly, you know, to a target, if you like seeing it hop and bounce, if you enjoy watching it roll, I think you can find the enjoyments, you know, at a lot of different venues. But then you talk about the things that add mystique and add interest in, you know, in the shot, and or, you know, the sense of spirit, you know, that you had walking and being on these courses in Scotland. You know, it all adds to it. And, you know, I think that I find now that my eyesight is getting bad, that's, you know, there's a thing that I can't share with my playing partners anymore. Like, I can't see their shots. Mm-hmm. I can see most of mine, but I just can't. And not being able to see the ball, you know, soar up there and in, you know, take the enjoyment in, you know, from that you get, and seeing, you know, your one of your mates really, you know, make a great play. It, pulls away a little bit. But I think we all, you know, have a great appreciation for that, the sense of adventure that you get from the land or don't get. You know, like you're saying, you know, you're playing and...
Yeah. You know, it's funny, that course is called The Plantation. It's a plantation of houses is what it is.
Well, the reason for things, I was on the train going down to Chicago the other day, and I started looking up in Google. I said, how in the world did all these places in, you know, Illinois, which is the flattest, second flattest state in the Union, well, how do they get called Arlington Heights and Mount Prospect and stuff like
Rolling
this?
Meadow, yeah, all these things.
Yeah.
Did you figure it out?
Yeah, it was all a you know, a marketing thing. It was back in the day, the city in the mid-1800s, the city was a place that, you know, had problems with water and typhoid and disease and stuff like that. So the people that were trying to build these towns and sell the real estate wanted to give them names that gave it a sense of, like, we're going
out
the mountains. We're going to someplace fresh and healthy. Yeah, we're going to go skiing in Mount Prospect.
Yeah, Arlington Heights, the highest peak of all Illinois.
But then, you know, starting with the birthplace of golf, you know, when you play these places like Berwick and North Berwick and Dunbar and, you know, it's pretty easy to start to feel, you know, the spirit of the game and what the, you know, what the Scots were talking about, you know, when they said how much they admired, you know, this exercise of the golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's like my favorite place in the world to go. And I think everyone should. I actually think there's some people who, unless they like change their perspective on golf, like, shouldn't go to Scotland because I think they'll be disappointed. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, well, this isn't like great condition always. This clubhouse is small, and they stop serving food at like 7 p.m. some places. Like, there's a lot of weird things that if you don't, it's just so different than here. Like, if you're used to playing fancy places here, you might not like it.
Yeah,
over there.
Yeah, no, and we've said that before, and I think it's true. You know, chacun son goût. You know, to each his own. And you know, I think that those people who want to go to the top 100 golf courses, you know, and you know, play those places and stuff because, you know, they like collecting those trophies. You know, that's their form of enjoyment in the game, and we happen to have a different sensibility. But you know what's interesting to me is that as I've been talking, I went up to Lasonia the day before you did with Marilyn. We were banging around for a long weekend after the summer programs, and I was talking to the pro there, and I asked him, you know, what the effect that Sand Valley had on Lasonia. You know, was it a positive and a negative? And he said they were having a great year, and they felt it was a very positive thing. But he said, you know, one of the things that was interesting to him is that the 20-somethings, you know, are becoming interested and driven in their golf consumption by architecture and design, which, you know, you guys have both experienced. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, I've been telling everybody around here for years that they ought to try Lasonia, but it was Andy's experience when he went up there and said, oh, I wonder what other golf courses in the area have been designed by these guys. I'd like to go visit them. And then, you know, that opened up a whole new area of interest and exploration, which is like never would have occurred to me, but encouraging, you know, in a world where everybody says, oh, golf is dying, to hear that, no, there's a sensibility alive in 20-somethings, you know, that's different and positive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not about the fancy quite as much.
Yeah, you just have to open your mind up a little bit to being okay with being in a different, something that you know you're probably not going to get what you're expecting, if that makes sense. Like, going up to Lasonia, okay, well, what is this? You know, I've heard great things about it. You look at kind of, you know, how much is the greens fee? You kind of like, oh, this place is probably pretty nice. But, like, the clubhouse is nothing fancy. And you kind of pull up there in the kind of gravel parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the course is immaculate,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's like, oh, that's a cool vibe. I like that.
Yeah.
Whereas some of these other courses, you know, the clubhouse is phenomenal, but the course is just complete crap.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, and the same thing with going over to Scotland. You have to be ready to have a little bit of an open mind to know that you're about to experience something that you've never experienced before, and that you're not going to probably shoot the same scores that you shoot at your club all the time and all that. But that's the adventure of golf that I think all of us around this table, that's why we play, is to experience as much as we can, whether it's going and playing Old Elm or Knollwood or Shore Acres or these like really, really great clubs, but also enjoying our favorite architects up at Spring Valley and Lasonia and some of these other places.
Yeah. You know? Oh gosh.
And having kind of your mindset ready to be like, oh, like I'm going today, I'm going to go play Spring Valley today or Canal Shores today to truly enjoy the game of golf and enjoy my swing and being with people that I want to be with and playing the game. But then also having the mindset of like, oh, I'd kind of like to go piece together a nice score today at Deerfield or, you know, Knollwood or something, a place that you've played a thousand times but has conditions that might allow you to score a little bit better, or, you know, it's just like a cool place to hit shots that you know you can hit. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, how we can, you know, screw our heads on to, you know, enjoy it or not enjoy it.
Right.
You know, I think that, like Andy said, you know, when you lead with score, you know, that usually isn't such a fun, interesting story. But, and I think, you know, having different ways of measuring the game is really important because, you know, if you come off a round where, you know, you didn't get your number, you didn't get that trophy, but, you know, what else is there, you know, that you walked away with? And I think, you know, the idea of, you know, reviewing your round and coming up with your favorite moments, you know, it's gone from favorite shots to best plays to favorite moments for me, because, you know, sometimes it's, you know, that something somebody else did. You know, like you watched your wife just, you know, flip it out of a bunker and knock it stiff to the hole. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you guys both went to Lasonia. We just changed this podcast to the Lasonia podcast. You know, we've talked about it like 8 times this summer. How'd you hit them?
Well, I just, you know, I hit them fabulously. You know, really, when I went back over the round and I started to, you know, started to think about, you know, what were my best shots and how many of them were there. And I thought, well, you know, I rate shots on a scale of like 1 to 5, 1 being that's the best I can do. And I had more of those shots in that round than, you know, than I can remember having. And on such great, great holes, like the very first hole to me is just a wonderful shot into that green, because the the left half of the green is guarded by this what looks like a castle wall and a turret. You know, I mean, it's round and it drops straight down like 12 feet, and so, you know, you tug that thing at all and you're at the bottom of a hole looking up over a wall. And I couldn't, I had the hardest time. I had 190 yards and I was hitting a 5-wood and I couldn't get myself lined up in the fairway where I felt comfortable. I felt like I was lined up too far left. It was just something about the slope and the optics of the fairway. So I double checked that and I got over this ball and, you know, created balance in commitment to the alignment I was in. And then I just put a shot on it. You know, I've been working on getting the club into a plane where it's compatible with the body rotation that I'm looking for. And I've really freed myself up to explore this, and I've been making pretty good headway on it. And I hit a ball that had this continuous feel, you know, that of the club head pouring through impact, and I hit that thing so flush. And when I looked up, it was just like a missile heading not just for the green, it was heading for the flag. And I mean, coming out of the box with a stroke like that, And to just stand in that moment and watch that thing and feel like, wow, I have earned this. I've been working at this for a long time. And that's the way I hit it, you know, around the whole golf course. You know, I stumbled and made three double bogeys out there and wasn't very good with the putter. But there were holes that had gotten me, you know, the mm-hmm. last few times I'd played. I just hadn't hit good shots, like that long par 5, 13th 13, hole.
Yeah.
I hadn't played that hole well in like 5 years. And to be able, now I'm at a point where, you know, my yardage is such that those diagonal row of bunkers
yeah.
going down there really, you know, that's a big deal for me to be able to hit that fairway. It used to be, I never even thought about those bunkers. Now, you know, that's actually cool. That actually makes the experience more for me than it was when I was younger, because now I've really got to be skillful, because mm-hmm. my carry distance won't allow me to be sloppy as it did when I was stronger. So anyway, I hit some shots that just absolutely helped me to know that that the work, you know, that I've done to make myself a better player has been fruitful. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a gorgeous day. So my measure of the round wasn't the score that I walked away with, but it was wonderful, you know, moments of, you know, personal triumph and being, you know, with my wife, who's gotten to be, you know, my greatest golfing chum. And, you know, we just had a delightful morning together. And when we were done, there's this house that's right by the clubhouse that overlooks the lake and the wonderful holes. I mean, man, if you ever rented that house, that'd be, and these guys were doing it right, because they had all their carts. There must have been 12 of them out there, and they were, you know, just, sitting outside, you know, having some brews after the round and in this gorgeous, you know, vista and enjoying the, you know, fellowship of their buddies. I mean, it was just like, I got to, you know, that was added to my experience as well.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. A place is the best.
It really is. I mean, you know, in a real quiet little Wisconsin way, it's really, the guys, the Oliphants are their name, which is a management company that took them over. And these guys are, first of all, they're golf course construction guys, so they're ground guys, dirt and grass guys, and they've really improved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said it's a quiet place, but it's also the biggest golf course I think I've played. You know, it's very maximal, yeah. All the design and all the holes. And I kind of think that's what more American golf courses should be like. Like, you have Scotland, where it's like very subtle and minimal, and we're just using the land how it is. But our land is so boring, and we, you know, some like American value about, we just want like big buildings and lots of money, and we're capitalists. So mm-hmm. we just build all our courses like as big and
build them up.
Yeah, exactly. And that somehow feels like right in a sense, like the way those courses in Scotland do, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, guys, these are the best. I could keep going all day, but we got things to do. Anything else you want to add before we sign off?
Well, I can't think of anything. I think, you know, that we've played more memorable golf than we've described today, but, you know, like you say, time's a wasting. So let's get on.
Clean contact.
Let's go play some golf.
I'd hit it again, because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.